The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
Small Biz America.
This is Making Business Work Better. And now, here's your host, Mike Miro.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Mike Miro with the Making Business Work Better radio program, and we're happy to have everybody with us today. Hope everything is going well in this new year. And that your resolutions are holding fast and you're beginning to see some of the positive things going on in your business. And we're here to help you. We're here to figure out how to help your business work better and help you improve and be more productive and accomplish your goals and objectives for 2008. And that's why we're here. So welcome. We're happy to have everyone with us today. Our guest today is Kim Whiting. She is the founder, the president, the CEO, the chief cook and bottle washer for Pappy's Pet Lodge, which is recognized in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex as the premier pet care facility in this area. And we want to welcome Kim. Thank you very much for being with us today, Kim.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Kim, let's start with the how you got into this. Tell us a little bit about Pappy's, what you do, and how you got started in this.
Well, Pappy's Pet Lodge is a full-service pet boarding, training, bathing, grooming, doggy daycare, and pet daycare facility. I got into this about 6 years ago. I owned a recruiting firm, a very successful recruiting firm for several years, and after the tragedy of 9/11, no one needed recruiting industry representatives any longer, so I had a choice at that point to continue to try to keep that business alive or to move on. And prior to owning the recruiting business, I worked in the hotel industry in the luxury hotel circuit for Fairmont Hotels and Rosewood Hotels and gained some valuable experience and skills in that, and I loved the industry, so I just figured I would take my two loves and combine them together, my love for the hotel industry and my love for pets, and created Pappy's Pet Lodge.
That's so neat, Kim. I mean, a lot of people feel like they're stuck doing things that they just have to do, and the fact that you were able to marry, you know, a couple of things that you had experience in, but also with your passion, and turn that into a business, that's very commendable. Tell me, how did you come up with the name of Pappy's Pet Lodge? That's kind of unusual.
My mom and I like to think that we are the creative marketing geniuses in the family. So we spent days just lobbying different names back and forth and back and forth. And we wanted something that was really unique, something that would send a message of warmth and love and just consistency. And from out of nowhere, my dad, who never says a word, suggested Pappy's Pet Lodge because Pappy is what my nieces call my father. So that's where it came from. Pappy's
Wow.
Pet Lodge was born by a brainchild of my dad.
Okay. And as, you know, when people think of a pet lodge, you know, when you hear the term lodge, you think of a place up in the mountains with a roaring fireplace and a place to go and kind of retreat and get away from things. And is that the way it is for your pet guests?
Well, we're not in the mountains yet. We don't have roaring. Oh, Mike, we might need to re-record that.
Okay.
All right, tell me when you're ready.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay. We're not in the mountains yet, and we don't have a roaring fire, but we do offer, you know, bottom line is when you are dealing with anybody's animals, dogs, cats, birds, ferrets, you name it, those animals respond to love and attention. So if you're looking for a place that's warm and cozy and just filled with a team of individuals that truly, truly have a passion for animals and their happiness, yes, that is the kind of lodge that we provide.
Okay. And what are some of the amenities that you offer the pets or the owners of the pets as part of what you do?
Well, we've grown in that area throughout the years. We are constantly surveying our customers and asking our customers what we can do to make their experience and their pet's experience better every time they come in. And in lieu of that, we've gained some very valuable insight onto additions and offerings that we can host to our customers. For example, our first boarding facility, we just had a traditional boarding kenneling environment. Well, there are customers that don't want their dogs to stay in a boarding kennel. So we revised our whole format and our floor plan, and we built 30 private boarding rooms. So these are rooms that are just like a room in your house. It has four walls and a door and a little pet bed. Some have TVs. Some have video cameras, so you can log on and watch your dogs 24 hours a day. That seemed to be the private boarding room, and also the webcams, the video cameras, have been a huge hit, because I think that just traditionally in our industry, pet boarding facilities, there was a real gray area.
Uh-huh.
I don't think consumers were educated the way they are now, and I don't think they were as scrutinizing as they are now. So I think my business in particular and our industry has had to raise the level of service and accommodations in lieu of the educated consumer.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure the TVs are all tuned to the pet channel or the animal channel or whatever it is, Animal Network.
A variety of TV programs and videos, but I'll tell you, we're moving kind of away from the TV, because what we've realized is, though it's a nice amenity, the dogs don't seem to really watch them. The owners like it, but we're opting to, you know, less TVs, more webcams.
I got you. So Kim, you've been doing this for 6 years now?
Yes.
How many locations do you have?
Currently, we have three. Beginning of January, we just hired a franchise consultant, so that by the end of this year, we hope that we will have a really great franchise offering developed that we can sell a product that's going to be successful to people, so that we can grow our business.
So you have taken your process and the model, so to speak, of your business, and now are getting it prepped to be able to roll it out as a franchise.
Absolutely.
Okay. And about how many people do you have in your organization?
We have, as of today, we have 30 employees, three locations. I have a regional director and three regional managers, and we are serving approximately 7,000 customers.
Wow. Wow. Now, early on, starting out, you know, just like any small business, one of the missions that you have is to get out there and find customers. What were some of the things that you did to early on let people know about Pappy's and get the word out about what you guys do?
Early on, it was a grassroots kind of bare bones. Obviously, we didn't have a whole lot of money to put into advertising and marketing. So it was really just a lot of footwork, getting out in the community, visiting chambers, discovering networking opportunities, getting involved in the community, and really just getting our face and our name out there.
Okay. And you, from what I understand, you're very active in the community, working with some nonprofit organizations and things like that. Have you gotten benefits from those in regards to your business?
Absolutely. I've been talking to several individuals that are interested in franchising, and it seems like they are having some anxiety at this point. You know, well, Kim, you're involved in 15 different community organizations, volunteer organizations, boards, and chambers. How do I do all that? And you know what I tell them is, you can't do it all up front.
Right.
It's something that you have to grow into. So initially, it's all going to benefit you in any capacity that you can give that time to promote your business. But I try to advise people, when you are starting a small business, you have so much on your plate that you pick one or two organizations, and I would always suggest the chamber first. There's a wider spectrum of programs. It's an affordable option, and it just really helps get you exposed to a larger number of people quicker.
Okay. And so the chamber being one, what were some of the types of networking groups that you've been involved in?
There are, once you start to dig into it a little bit, there was one time that I had created a list. I think there were probably 50 different networking groups.
Wow.
And organizations in just the Dallas-Fort Worth area that I had visited them all once or twice.
Yeah.
And you know, I think you just shake the trees a little bit. You ask around. People that are in the chambers typically are members of other networking groups. And you just visit as many as you can until you find your home.
You try to get the word out in as many venues as possible.
And it can be exhausting. There were days when I first started the business that I was at a breakfast networking event, a lunch networking event, and would hit 2 or 3 p.m., 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. networking events.
Wow. That's a long day.
It is.
That's a long day. But sometimes early on when you're getting your business off the ground, you got to put in those long days.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What, as you have grown your business, one of the things that I think about often is the story about how you got some national publicity. Tell me a little bit about what happened with that and how you ended up on the ABC Evening News.
We've been on every local news channel multiple times. We've been mentioned on almost every radio station in the Dallas-Fort Worth area somewhere along the way. And we were recognized by a couple of national TV shows and chosen to participate in a couple of reality TV shows as part of the pet segment. And honestly, there was a book that I read several years ago. It was written by a TV reporter named Jeff Crilly, and the book is called Free Publicity. And any new business owner, somebody who doesn't have a big unlimited advertising and PR budget, should probably read that book. And that's how it all just kind of domino effect. I started doing some of the things that were suggested in that book, and I started getting noticed by the local media. And as I got noticed, when these national TV shows came to town, they would start asking around, I need a pet care facility for this segment of my show. And because my name was out there, people knew me, I had been recognized in the media, my name came up first.
And that visibility gives you credibility in the marketplace. It's like we're a real deal. And there's something magical about getting media coverage that says, you know, these guys are different than everybody else.
And we've become now, it's really an interesting little road that we've gone down with the media, because with a couple of the local TV stations, we are the go-to. So if they want to do a segment on pet obesity and exercise, or a segment on, you know, a strain of viruses that's in the area, or any kind of pet-related issues, we found that they're just defaulting to us.
Yeah, yeah. And that comes from having the relationships with the media outlets.
Exactly.
Which is one of the things that Jeff talks about in his book, is getting out there and getting known for what you do with the media, because they're always looking for experts to validate a particular story or something along those lines.
Right, right.
Well, Kim, what, going back now to starting your business, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced in getting your business off the ground and getting it to the point that you felt like you were having success in your business?
I think some of the hiring a business coach was probably the most beneficial decision I ever made. It was hard. It was a hard decision because I did it early on in my business. Again, the funds were not there, the revenue stream was not there, but I made a sacrifice because I realized, and I think what a lot of small business owners, first-time franchise owners need to understand, you can't do it all. And, you know, I read a book years ago, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Uh-huh. You do what you do best, and you hire people to do what you don't do best.
Right.
For example, I'm not an accountant or a bookkeeper or a CPA, and I'm not going to try to. You know, that's the philosophy that people need to understand. You know, people think you can start and open and run a business and you know, put your time in and it's going to pay off. But what people don't realize is a lot of us did not go to school and get an education, and even throughout the course of our business lives, no one ever taught us how do you manage people? How do you manage a business? How do you build a business? You know, when you're at the top, who's there for you to lean on?
Right.
And, you know, hiring a business coach was probably a pivotal moment in my career and my success.
Excellent. And so in working with the business coach, what were some of the types of things that you worked on?
we initially started, believe it or not, I started a business that is very, very successful today, and I had no business plan. I'm a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of girl, and I've been very lucky throughout the course of my life. But the first thing that my business coach and I did was sit down and spend several months nailing down a comprehensive business plan.
Okay.
The second segment or exercise that my business coach took me through was we went through just basically like management 101. What are the different management styles? What are the different styles of employees, types of employees? How do you deal with employees? What are ways to correct employees? You know, how do you get employees to work harder for you? We're in an industry now where a lot of small business owners and franchise buyers and owners are, you know, we're at the mercy of our employees, basically, and you're talking $7 to $10, $12 an hour employees, and
right.
There's a lot of demand out there for those individuals. So not only do you have to spend the time and make the investment to secure good employees, you've got to keep them motivated, and you've got to make them provide an environment that enhances their need to want to come to work.
So as you work through your plan and began to develop the leadership that you needed to run your business, what were some of the biggest challenges that you've had to deal with from an employee standpoint?
Well, in our industry, there is a lot of turnover. Obviously, people don't wake up every day and say, I want a job where I get to clean up doggy poop and pee all day. So it is...
They don't stand in line for that one, huh?
It is a constant recruiting effort.
Yeah.
We're always shaking the trees in every aspect of recruiting that we can, not just on the internet and through the newspaper, but... You know, we want to find and secure the best of the best within a realm of what we can offer.
Okay.
So that has definitely been the biggest challenge.
Okay, so finding people, finding not just people, but finding the right people with the right mindset, so to speak, to be a part of what you're doing. Because it's, I wouldn't think that anybody off the street would work well with animals. I would think that you kind of have to have somebody that loves animals, number one, but number two, has the patience to learn how to work with them effectively.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and that's, I was speaking with someone yesterday about the same issue, and, you know, the biggest challenge is you can't just hire someone that just stands there and flips burgers. I mean, it's not that mentality.
Right.
You've got a budget of $7 to $10 an hour to fill a position, and you've got to find somebody, one, that will want to do that kind of monotonous work every day, but has, you know, some level of intelligence because they're dealing with live animals. You've got to recognize when they're happy, when they're sad, when they're healthy, when they're not. You know, in a doggy playroom situation, you don't realize it, but you've got 20 or 25 live animals, dogs, playing together. You have to be able to recognize when there's a fight getting ready to break out,
right,
or clean up messes when they make a mess. So there's,
right,
it's a lot more than people give thought to.
Yeah, okay. So one of the things that your business is known for in the area is your level of customer satisfaction and service. And I know that's a byproduct of your passion for what you do. How do you get that mindset down into the people who work for you?
We make sure that everybody from the bottom up, everyone on our team works as a team. There is no clear-cut, concrete, this is my job, this is not my job. So if there is a manager on duty and they need some help in the back cleaning up the messes, the manager will go clean up messes. No one says, this is not my job.
Okay. So everybody's pitching in.
Everybody pitches in because the bottom line and at the end of the day, what every one of my 30 employees understand without a doubt, if we do not take care of the four-legged guest, we don't have the two-legged customers.
Okay.
And so everyone understands my paycheck, my career, the growth of our company, opportunities for me to grow personally, professional, et cetera. If I'm with this company, it all starts with, we return your pet in the same or better condition than when you left it with us.
Okay.
You know, and at the same time, you know, we parlay the excelled customer service skills that I learned working in the luxury hotel circuit. You know, my front desk employees that are dealing with our human customers, you know, we practice such a high level of customer service, and we try to put ourselves in the customer's shoes.
Okay. And so there is ongoing, how much training do you do with the people who come in as a part of your organization?
Our training program for the pet care technician, the kennel position, kennel worker, is probably about a 90-day to 6-month training process. They don't get to touch or deal with animals at least for the first 2 weeks that they are on site.
Wow.
Because they have to learn, and they're tested. So we have tests for all of our employees on their job. So if they do not test out that they have learned and comprehended pet behavior and policies and how we do things, they continue to train until they pass the test.
Okay.
Once they pass the test, then they're allowed to handle animals.
Wow.
You know, front desk, it's probably about a 6-month to 9-month learning curve.
And so you have ongoing training. You also have documentation of the way things should be done that they can refer back to. Is that right?
Yep. We have a very detailed operations manual and policies and procedures and training processes.
Kim, if we could roll back the clock and you knew back then what you know now in terms of the challenges and the issues you've had to face, and if you could take all the knowledge you have now about your business and roll back the clock and start again, what would you do different?
Buy a franchise.
Buy a franchise.
You know, I wish I could take somebody through the pain and suffering and the challenges and struggles personally and professionally that I went through the first 2 to 3 years of starting this business. And, you know, if you have an interest and you want to go out on your own and there's someone out there who has already paid their dues and written, you know, a good program, and granted, there are good programs out there and there are not so good programs out there, but I certainly would have enjoyed being able to get in and one profit sooner and have control of my life sooner.
Okay. You think that would have gotten you to the level of success a little bit faster if you had a system along the lines of a franchise?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the other thing that I would recommend, and just going back to this, is I think as a business owner, I don't care if you own your own CPA firm, you know, to a Subway franchise, to a pet care facility, when you are the owner and president and you are at the top, you cannot share your thoughts, your feelings, your stresses with your staff. You need a business coach. You need a mentor. You need a network of other small business owners.
Right.
Somewhere you can go that you can vent and get valuable advice and constructive criticism at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the things that in the folks that I work with, I try to encourage them to create their pseudo board of directors by having a group of advisors like a banker, a CPA, an insurance agent, an attorney, a business coach, people that they can get answers to some of the tough questions, because as you said earlier, most of us aren't trained, or we don't come to the party with all that information and all those skills. And so if we have this group of advisors, not only do you have some resources available to your business, you also have some people that can be your sounding board so that, you know, when you've got an idea or you want to try something new, you know, I try to surround myself with people that are smarter than me. And you know, a lot of times I'll come up with some stuff and they will give me variations on ideas that then help me kind of clarify what I want to go do and make the ideas and the implementation of them a lot more sound.
Right. And you know, I've learned, you know, you stumble through and you meet so many people along your journey that you know, once your head stops spinning and you have a chance to sit down for a minute, you know, one thing that I have learned is you've got to surround yourself with people that, A, pick you up, inspire you to keep going, and can also give you some valuable professional advice because of their own expertise that you
right.
don't have.
Right. Yeah, I love what you said about the inspiration because, you know, a lot of times as small business owners, we kind of get the business owner's blues, so to speak. You know, you just kind of go, why am I working so hard or why am I having to deal with this stuff? Wouldn't it be easier if I just had a job? And sometimes we need those people to pick us up and pump us up and let us know that the things that we're doing are making a difference in the lives of our employees and things like that.
Well, and I think sometimes you're so buried in the day-to-day task of just keeping everything afloat and bills paid and employees happy. And, again, when you're at the top, nobody ever tells you you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Nobody ever pats you on the back, so it's
That's
very
right.
important that you have family and friends and colleagues and professionals around you that say, hey, man, don't forget, you're doing good.
Yeah.
Hang in there. And, you know, a lot of days it was my business coach. Early days, we would spend 4 hours together. The first 2 hours I was crying and kicking and screaming. The second 2 hours we were working on something productive.
Yeah, and sometimes you just need to vent. You just need to blow some steam and let people know that, you know, you're just not having a good day.
Right.
It happens sometimes. Well, Kim, we've kind of run out of time. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with us. And, again, I want to thank you. This is Kim Whiting with Pappy's Pet Lodge. And if you have any questions for Kim, shoot us an email at questions@makingbusinessworkbetter, and we'll forward those on to her and hopefully try to address those on the air as we move forward with our program. Kim, thank you again for being a part of what we're doing, and we look forward to seeing you down the road.
Great, Mike. Thank you so much for having me, and I wish all of you the best of luck.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay.
Before we get out of here today, I want to hit the mailbag and address one of the questions that we received. We received a question from John, who's a business owner up in New Jersey. And John wrote, I like your show. I am a small business owner in New Jersey. I want to grow in 2008, but I'm not sure how to get more sales. I advertise some, have a website, but no salespeople. I've thought about hiring one, but don't really have the money to do so. Can you help me? Well, John, you're in the same boat that a lot of small business owners are in. We want to grow. We've kind of maxed out our ability to get out there and get business, and we're kind of at a point where we need to bring in some sales help. And so when you evaluate that, think about have you tapped all the resources available to you, such as your network, potential referral partners, people who can continue to refer business to you or send potential prospects your way. And if you have, it may be time when you need to bring that salesperson in. And be selective about that, because these are the people that are going to be the face of your business out there, and you really want to make sure that they represent you appropriately and, more importantly, can get in front of the people who are going to buy your products and services. So as you move forward in trying to add a salesperson, have a clear job description of what they're going to do. Look at your comp plan. Make sure that you can put together a comp plan that works for you as well as them. Focus a lot on paying for them delivering your goods and services. Look at how much an average customer is worth to you. You want to compensate them fairly, but you want to also make sure that it's profitable for you as well. So look at your numbers. Make sure you can, you can put together a package, and then get out there and find the right person. Ask around. Talk to people who have other salespeople and what they look at and things they think about, and then get out there and put the feelers out. One of the areas that I know is real popular right now with small business owners in trying to find people is Craigslist. And you might potentially put an ad out on Craigslist, and there's a lot of people that look at that every day. Monster.com, some other resources out there as well to try to find the person you're looking for. So, John, I hope that helps, and If anybody has any other questions you'd like for us to address on the air, please shoot us an email at questions@makingbusinessworkbetter.com. Well, we've come to the end of our show today. Thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to being with you next week. And if you have any questions, again, shoot us an email at questions@makingbusinessworkbetter.com, where we're here to inform you and inspire you to take your business to the next level, get out there and do the things you need to do to achieve success, and most importantly, make your business work better so the work you do in your business is better and you're able to have the things you want out of your business. Everybody have a great day, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Making Business Work Better. To find out more about Mike Miro or to subscribe to this podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.